and we are back here on KUCI's Justice or Just Us. That's The Visionaries from a CD titled Free the P, and the P stands for Palestinians, but it also stands for all people. And great, great track. And I tell you, I think Tumex is probably one of the best hip-hop artists around right now. Hey, today we are taking a look at quality of life, inspired by a filmmaker, Robert Rodriguez, and we know Robert Rodriguez from El Mariachi, Spy Kids, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Benjamin Morgan, quote-unquote, enrolled in his own personal independent film school, refusing to spend tens of thousands of dollars on formal film school. Morgan instead spent under $5,000 to produce three narrative videos that won him critical acclaim and a reputation for creating entertaining, incredibly realistic films with little or no resources. All of his films revolve around the lives of at-risk youth, and the stories are drawn from his own real-life experiences as a former troubled teen and his 12 years of professionally working directly with at-risk youth in the juvenile justice system. His newest film is actually his first feature film. It's titled Quality of Life. And not only was it shot and edited in the Mission District of San Francisco, but it presents an authentic and gripping look at the lives of two young graffiti writers struggling to maintain their friendship after getting busted by the cops. Here to talk about his new film is director Benjamin Morgan. Benjamin, are you with us this morning?
Hey, I am. How you doing, Jared?
Good. Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today. I should point out that the film is opening tomorrow right across from campus at the Edwards University Town Center 6. So that is certainly something people want to check out. Why don't you begin by giving a little synopsis of the film for our listeners?
Okay, first of all, I always like to tell people it's not a documentary because no matter how many times I say that, people seem to think it is. So it's basically it's a friendship story, and it's about two graffiti writers from San Francisco from the Mission District and them just adjusting to a new lifestyle after they get arrested for the last and final time and they're threatened and faced with prison time.
So would you say that the film is primarily about graffiti artists, or the film uses that as, you know, uses that as an avenue or a vehicle to spread a bigger, broader message?
Yeah, really, graffiti is just a backdrop. Graffiti is a setting. It's a friendship story. It's a human story. It's a universal story. It just happened to be a story that was familiar to me and to Brian Burnham, the co-writer and co-star of the film, who was involved in the contemporary culture. This was really based on his life and his experiences and his friends. So graffiti is a backdrop, and we use the title as a way to push the political dialogue, but the story is really ultimately about friendship.
The it's interesting that your bio describes you as a, you know, DIY, a do-it-yourself kind of filmmaker, and certainly this program has spent a lot of hours looking at kind of do-it-yourself culture, whether we're looking at Food Not Bombs and you know, feeding the homeless yourself, or whether we're talking about, you know, street stenciling or whatever it might be. At the same time, graffiti or street art or whatever we want to call it is a kind of a do-it-yourself approach to spreading messages, to creating something new, and so forth. Could you talk a bit about your decision to kind of teach yourself or do-it-yourself filmmaking?
Well, it actually, for quality of life, it was more necessity than anything. I think if someone would have thrown $1 million at it, we probably would have taken it. But it ended up being the best way to make this movie because it was the authentic way to make a movie about graffiti. So when we realized that we didn't have any money, we adopted the graffiti model to make the movie. So, you know, graffiti is all about getting up. It's about getting a spot and not having any resources and making the best of what you have, racking your paint, you know, and doing whatever you can and still making a powerful, compelling statement without having any resources. So we adopted that model to get the movie made. So we didn't scout locations. We didn't, do all the normal things that you would do on a production. It was just about getting up for us. We would find a spot. Sometimes we were getting our locations the same day, and we would get in there. We'd get one or two takes, and we'd get out. So So we actually wrote a book about this too. A little plug for you. And that's what the book is about: DIY filmmaking and making a movie with no money and using the graffiti model as a way to do that.
We're speaking with Benjamin Morgan. He is the director of Quality of Life, a film. Now, this isn't a new film, but it's new to the Irvine community. Has it been touring the country? Is that how it's been working?
Well, we played film festivals last year and actually 2004 as well. And then for the past 6 months or so, or before that actually, we've been raising money and trying to get just enough to take it out on a theatrical. So we played in our hometown of San Francisco for 6 weeks, and now we're rolling it out, you know, self-distributing in theaters across the country. And Irvine will be the first place we've really played, theatrically at least. We played film festivals in Berlin and Stockholm, Spain, Seattle. We played all over the world, but theatrically, Irvine will be the first place we've played outside of our hometown, and before we go to New York in April.
And was it playing, if I remember correctly, at the Red Vic in San Francisco?
Red Vic was the last place we played. Yeah, we played 4 different theaters actually in San Francisco.
And that's just my own little plug for the Red Vic. So
it's my favorite theater on the planet.
Yeah,
it's a cooperative, and it's just the coolest place you'll ever be.
All right, well, let's back up a bit and tell us a little bit about your background and how that kind of became the impetus for the film.
Well, there were two things that pushed me to make this movie. It was one that I was involved with the graffiti subculture as a kid in the 80s. So, you know, something that was always near and dear to my heart and something I always wanted to tell a story about. There are so many stories to tell about the graffiti subculture. But also I've been working with at-risk kids within the juvenile justice system for the past 13-plus years. So there was nothing to me that exemplified everything that's wrong with the juvenile justice system like the war on graffiti. It's a completely symptom-based intervention. You focus on literally the writing on the walls, and you try to paint over it and hope that the problem goes away without addressing any of the core issues. So my experience in the juvenile justice system was really what pushed me, you know, to make a political statement. Although, as I've mentioned, the film is not politically charged in any way. The subject matter and the title, of course, is.
Could you give our listeners a sense, maybe you're speaking personally, I don't know if you could speak generally, but, you know, why do individuals turn to street art or graffiti or whatever term we want to refer to it as?
I think the reasons are really varied. It's an incredibly diverse culture. When I was growing up, the culture was not nearly as diverse as it is now. You know, I'm white, and when I was growing up, I was a minority, and it was pretty much an urban phenomenon of people who were mostly working class, you know, folks from the city. Nowadays, you can't categorize street artists or graffiti artists. They come from every walk of life. You've got people coming from the suburbs. You have people in every corner of the globe, from Berlin to London to Bulgaria, Iran. People are doing it for different reasons. But I think the one driving core motivation that everyone shares, it's an act of rebellion. It's also an act of individuality, and cities are very anonymous places, and it's hard to make a name for yourself, especially if you don't have a lot of resources. You know, you can buy a building or a billboard or a television commercial or a company or whatever, and you have an identity, and you make a name for yourself in the city. Well, most people don't have that alternative, but graffiti and street art gives people a way to have a voice and to make a statement and to be heard without having any resources whatsoever.
It's interesting because I think I just finished watching the film, I think, at 1 o'clock last night, and it is quite it's quite good. But one of my favorite scenes is actually not much action, although the film certainly hits you over the head with a lot of action and a great soundtrack. But I think my favorite part is just a dialogue between a father and a son, where the father is asking the son, you know, why do you have to do this? Why, you know, you want to express yourself, you know, get a billboard. And the son says, wait a second, you've got your own business. You can't afford a billboard. You know, where can I turn as a teenager to express myself? Where can I go to, you know, to spread whatever message I want? And it's interesting because given, you know, the war in Iraq and the so-called war on terror and so forth, for those activists that want to send a message of peace, we could either banner drop illegally or street stencil or graffiti. We certainly don't have resources to express our individuality.
Yeah, it's interesting because so much of what you see in the film is drawn directly from Brian's life. You know, we'd be talking and he'd tell me of things that happened yesterday, you know, and then I'd put him in the script and write it all wrong. And then he'd have to, you know, rewrite it. But that scene where Mikey and Pops are having it out about, you know, where he's at with his life and doing graffiti and is he going to make the same choices and keep going to jail and eventually prison, and that was drawn directly from a debate Brian had had with his dad. Excuse me. And I agree with you that graffiti and street art, it's the ultimate equalizer. It's, you know, there are so many things right now that are happening. It's a really interesting time in history. The internet is the great equalizer. People can have a voice. You can have a blog and people all over the world can hear you. You don't have to have a lot of money for that. You can have no money, really, and just do it at the library. And graffiti and street art's the same way. You've got people, you know, the Billboard Liberation Front and Ron English. You've got people who are taking over billboards, making a powerful political statement, and not only are the people in the city seeing them, but then people are taking pictures of them and putting them online, and people all over the world are seeing them. So I think it's a really interesting time, and it hasn't quite clicked with the political movement, and I'm really curious to see, you know, that's my own. Most of the graffiti writers that I know don't really have an interest in politics. I'm not saying all, but most don't. But I think it definitely represents, at least potentially, the most potent form of nonviolent resistance that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think that you're really onto something there. I mean, the past year or two, we had someone from the Billboard Liberation Front, and I say someone because the person was anonymous to me, but we did have, I forget what the moniker that the main guy goes by, and we also had Josh McPhee, who some listeners may know as the editor, if you will, of the book Stencil Pirates.
Yeah,
and
good guy.
Yeah, and we've also had folks from Adbusters. Tim Walker from the Media Foundation of Adbusters. So we've really taken a look at all of this, and it seems that all the offshoots of street art have really taken on the political messages, and it's at the same time, there's a difference between the medium and the message. And I think your point is that when the medium itself is political because it's rebellious and it's, you know, the great equalizer, that the message kind of becomes secondary.
Right. It is the act of creating itself that is rebellious. And I think that's what a lot of youth latch on to. It's something that we had difficulty explaining when we were trying to get this movie made and then get, you know, find a distributor. People didn't really understand, first of all, that youth were attached to this in any way, and they thought that there was this core niche audience of graffiti writers and that there weren't that many of them and they wouldn't pay to go to the movies. And what they fail to understand is that graffiti has really become the last form of urban rebellion, and that kids in general have latched onto it because of the act, because it is like, you know, an F you in your face kind of thing, that I'm going to take back public property, and that, you know, I can't afford that ad, I can't afford the Gap billboard or the Toyota or Nike, but I can put my name on a wall. And, you know, you can't really stop me, and you can try. But so I think that there's this very, you know, when you look back at history too, when there's, you know, a lot of bank robbings going on around the time of the Great Depression, and, you know, there are people that are kind of rallied behind that, and they were excited about mobster films, and I think that although, you know, graffiti is definitely, you know, people don't want to have someone tag on their house or something, it's not like they want to take it home with them, there's definitely this kind of people idolize it in a certain way and glamorize it and respect it, really, especially youth and especially people who are politically motivated.
Certainly, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I teach a course on crime and popular culture, and I just finished lecturing last week on the whole concept of criminals who kind of become heroic icons, like, you know, Billy the Kid or Jesse James, and there's this kind of myth that they were these Robin Hoods who, you know, robbed banks and then gave the money back to the farmers who lost their land to the railroads and so forth. But yeah, the same with, you know, during the Depression, you have, you know, Dillinger and Capone and all of these figures that kind of took on, became heroic icons. But anyway, we are speaking with Benjamin Morgan, talking about his film Quality of Life. Let's move to some of the non-graffiti points of the movie, because as you point out, that's really just a backdrop. The film is shot and edited in the Mission District of San Francisco, and while it's not a documentary, it has a very gritty kind of realistic feel to it. Could you tell our listeners a bit about life in the Mission District and the kind of street culture that you were trying to depict?
Yeah, well, the Mission is really the core of this movement in San Francisco, and certainly one of the cores in the world. And you've seen a lot of famous artists come out of there, Doug One and Twist and, you know, Barry McGee. And so we've had all these world-renowned artists come out of this movement, and now there's this new generation, Sam Flores and Andy Schultz and, you know, these cats that are coming out of the Mission. So we were really committed to shooting the entire film in the Mission and shooting it in basically doc mode. So we had, you know, we had a cinematographer and he had an assistant, and then we had a sound man, and that was really all we needed. You know, we had a gaffer who did some lights now and then, but it was really, we were in documentary mode. We didn't have a crew of 50 people with a van, you know, a big grip truck. We just were out there on the street shooting, and it was really liberating, and we were able to move fast. You know, we shot the film in 18 days, so we didn't have a lot of time. So a lot of the aesthetic that we were going for just grew out of the resources that we had available to us. So we didn't have the luxury of time or the luxury of having a huge crew, but it was also a conscious decision to not have a big crew because we wanted to stay faithful to the graffiti subculture and the aesthetic of graffiti, and really the aesthetic of bombing, because this film isn't about piecers, you know, guys who, you know, do big, elaborate, colorful pieces in broad daylight, you know, with permission. This is about street bombers, guys who are going out and just getting spots quick, fast, get in, get out. So we had to adopt that same model to get the film made so that we stayed faithful to the characters.
And what are some of the risks of juveniles growing up in the Mission District? What challenges do they face?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we made this film about guys that were in their early 20s, because that's a time in a lot of graffiti writers' lives that they face the same choice. You go to jail so many times, and, you know, you get to a point in your life where you have a girlfriend or somebody who's, you know, kind of a parent is, you know, getting on you about consistently getting in trouble and when are you going to get your life together, even if skateboarding tickets and parking tickets. I mean, these kind of things just add up, and you keep going to jail, and you can't get ahead. So we actually made a conscious decision to move it up, because the original script was based on teenagers, but we moved it up to mid-20s because that's when people were facing this crisis. And I think what people at that age group in the Mission are facing, and internationally, really, a lot of graffiti writers that I know from, you know, Berlin to London to Stockholm are facing, is that they can't find a job that pays them enough to live the way they want to live, you know, which is to have the kind of lifestyle they want to have, where you can afford to have a nice house and you can afford to eat well and you can afford to take vacations. And also, there aren't a lot of good job opportunities out there. The jobs that are available for most of my friends are, you know, menial jobs that don't pay very much, don't have benefits, or are not very gratifying. So I think, you know, we've seen in the bigger picture that there's been kind of a shift in the disbursement of wealth, where you've got, you know, 1% of the population has 90% of the wealth or something like that. And so you've got people down at the bottom that are just clamoring to try to make ends meet. And you see a lot of them turning to things that people consider, you know, undesirable. But for them, it's a creative outlet. It's the only thing that they can grasp onto.
Yeah, and I did misspeak earlier, because I think that that's one of the important parts of the movie, is that they're not... When I say teenagers, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, 18 or 19, just at that point where you're no longer really going to be tried as a juvenile, and you're not quite really an adult, but you're kind of coming of age. And so in one sense, the film is kind of a coming of age. And I know that that sounds cliche, but in a real sense, it kind of is that kind of film.
No, it absolutely is a coming-of-age film. You know, I don't take offense to that at all. And people come of age at different times, but, you know, a lot of my friends didn't come of age at, you know, 15 or 16 or whatever you see it in the movies typically. You know, they either went to college or they didn't, or they went and got a job, but, you know, they still kind of did the same stuff that they were doing when they were in high school in terms of partying on the weekends and hanging out with friends and not really getting serious about anything. And I think it really is a result of the way things are culturally now that, you know, there aren't a lot of clear choices in terms of employment and your future. So people do get stuck in these certain kinds of ruts. But I think graffiti and street art offer people this kind of this fun, exciting lifestyle to live and to be, I think most importantly, famous in your culture and your clique, your group. You get to be famous. People know who you are, and that's invaluable.
I want to remind listeners they're in tune to KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, KUCI.org on the internet, where we now podcast our public affairs program. So you could log on and find out how to listen to me even more. And we're speaking with Benjamin Morgan. You go by Ben or Benjamin?
Oh, you can call me Ben. That's fine.
Oh, there you go. He's the director of a new film, Quality of Life, opening tomorrow at Edwards University Town Center. And we just have a couple minutes left, but I was I don't want to give too much away from the plot line, but there is a point in the movie where one of the characters, and of course the film kind of chronicles the divergent paths that two friends take. One of the characters has an opportunity to kind of use his talent for graffiti or street art for an advertisement. And some folks might say that that's selling out and that you need to keep the art form authentic. How do you respond to that?
I think it's an incredibly difficult challenge that a lot of artists face in all walks of life, whether it's music or film or graffiti, that you have something that you love to do and you do it in a certain way, and the ultimate coming of age for anyone is to be able to get paid for doing what you love. So if that opportunity faces you and someone says, you're really good at doing art, you know, you're a graffiti artist, but you're so talented, you could do advertisements. You could work for my design firm and, you know, have six figure income. That's pretty hard to turn away. And, you know, you see a lot of people getting sucked into it. And the challenge for him was that, you know, that the opportunity wasn't perfect. He had to change who he was and so on. But you've also seen a lot of people have taken advantage of that and done quite well for themselves. You know, you've got Doug Wan from San Francisco. He's started a firm in New York, and he designed Eminem's logo and Jay-Z, and he's doing really well. And so it can be done, but it's this balance that I think a lot of artists can relate to. How do you make – is it better to, you know, wait tables at night and then do your art during the day, or are you better off trying to adapt and make sacrifices? It's a real challenge that I've had a lot of people come up to me and say they could relate to, that, you know, they weren't graffiti artists or whatever, but they were artists in some way. And I think it's a pretty common struggle.
And I guess that leads to a nice, you know, closing point. How were you able to make a film that is certainly getting a lot of acclaim and, you know, traveling the country without, quote unquote, selling out? How are you able to maintain your independence as a filmmaker? And what advice would you give to listeners who want to follow in your footsteps?
I think filmmakers, especially if you're writing a script, you have to consider yourself your only audience. And if you are happy with what you write, then you know that there's a segment of the population out there who thinks like you and likes the same kind of things you do, and you'll make somebody happy. So that's the way that Brian and I approached the story, that we didn't care what anyone thought. We just cut. If we were happy with what we had written, then we moved on, and we didn't think about it too much. So that's we just stayed authentic to the subculture, but also stayed true to our own goals and our own beliefs, and told a story that was real. And you know, I've had graffiti writers come up to me from all over the world, from Berlin to Seattle to everywhere to San Francisco, come up to me and say the same exact phrase: "I feel like you told a story about my life." And I get that email and that quote, it's just eerie when I keep hearing it. And there really is no higher compliment.
And how are you able to finance the film, if you don't mind asking?
No, not at all, not at all. I mean, this is, once again, I hate to keep plugging my book, but, you know, the guy, Soft Skull Press, the same people who put out Stencil Pirates, Josh's book, right, are putting out our book this summer, and that's something we talk about a lot. How do you make a movie with no money? It can be done. There are resources available. And, you know, we were just really creative. We had two art auctions where local artists donated their art, and we threw a big party, and DJs volunteered, and we got the space for free, and we sold thousands of dollars of art, and that really, you know, we were able to buy our film stock with our first art auction, and so we were creative there. We basically sold screen credit, so, you know, people could have their name on the screen for $100 or $300. They could write a little note, and then we actually did raise some investment once the snowball got going a little bit, and sold some shares here and there, but mainly it was just scraping and clawing, and you know, there's a saying that if you follow your bliss, doors will open where there were no doors before, and that really was the case for us, that, you know, it just seemed hopeless every day, but we just kept stepping off ledges and hoping that a parachute would appear, and it did. Things just kept opening up for us, and I think it was because we stayed faithful to our vision.
The film is called Quality of Life. It opens tomorrow, March 10th, at Edwards University Town Center 6. And are you going to be there this weekend?
I actually will not be there this weekend, but Brant, my filmmaking partner, the guy who wrote the story with me and produced the film, he will be there for Q&A sessions in the evenings on Friday and Saturday.
Great. And if listeners are interested, I've got a pair of tickets to go see the movie this weekend. You could call in at 949-UCI-KUCI, 949-824-5824. Ben, thank you so much for being with us this morning on KUCI.
Thank you, Jared.
And good luck with the film.
Thanks. Can I give a quick plug for our website, QualityOfLifeTheMovie.com?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Please do. Say it again.
QualityOfLifeTheMovie.com, QualityOfLife-TheMovie.com. We're also on MySpace at Quality of Life.
And what is going to be the name of the book on Soft Skull?
It's called Putting the Pieces Together, The Graffiti Model for Indie Filmmaking.
Great. And good luck with that, too. And I hope the film is a success.
Great. Thanks, Jared.
Take care. Bye-bye. And again, you could give us a call here at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Get a pair of tickets to go see Quality of Life this weekend at the Edwards University Town Center 6. And while I'm taking your call, here is brand new gel, KUCI Innerva.